And it says we're on the air, and you can probably, those of you in the chat room, let's see what if I can get into the chat room. If I can get into the chat room. It says live now. And I don't see why it's not working. Hold on. Let me type in the... Okay, there. I had to type in the call numbers for the show again. There we go. And I'm going to just go ahead and start. Okay. And I realize this is New Year's Day and probably not too many listeners for tonight's show. However, because I've been having trouble getting the show going, that's probably another reason why there aren't that many listeners at the moment. But I anticipate the chat room will fill out shortly. So let me just check my settings here to make sure my volume's okay and that the broadcaster is, in fact, broadcasting. Everything seems to be working just fine. Let me boost my volume just a little bit in mixer parlance. We want to tickle the red. You always want to tickle the red a little bit. Okay. So, sorry. In this case, it's tickling the yellow. And I just have to apologize beforehand for this cold that I caught, but I think I'll be able to get through this show. And it's only going to be 1 hour. I've shortened the length of our Yahweh's Covenant People to 1 hour. And this is going to be episode one of the Parthians. And I'm going to start out, and here I'm going to put this link in the chat room. And this is www.keithhunt.com, which contains this article. On, sorry, on the forgotten Parthian / Israelite Empire number one, restitution of all things. And this is episodes of the books, several books actually written by Stephen Collins. And so what we're going to do, we're going to read along with Stephen Collins here. And sorry for not scheduling the program in time. I had to reboot my entire system, get everything going, and get rid of this Windows 10 virus, because Windows 10 is a virus. It's spyware. Excuse me. Windows 10 is spyware. And I finally got rid of all the Windows 10. I never accepted the invitation to take Windows 10. Nevertheless, it somehow got on my computer, and all kinds of backdoor ads were coming onto my computer, into my email, etc., etc., and it was bugging up my computer. So I had to do a system restore, and I had to find, there's an online program that allows you to remove the Windows 10 pop-up ads and to remove anything that Windows 10 has put on your computer. So I had to go through that routine earlier today. And that messed up my Skype connection to TalkShoe. So I'm dual broadcasting right now via my phone to TalkShoe and via my computer, a mixing board, to Eurofolk Radio. So I'll see if I can repost the link as a question. For some reason, TalkShoe never allows me to post a link twice in the chat box. So you'll just have to scroll up. Anyway, this is www.keithhunt.com/parth1.html. And it's the restitution of all things is the heading here. And The title is The Forgotten Parthian / Israel Empire Number 1, History Records But Historians Forget. No, historians don't forget. They take marching orders from the Jews who deliberately cover these things up. And the reason why the Jews have influenced historians to forget about the Parthian Empire is because the Parthians were Israelites. And because the Jews claim to be the only representative tribe of all the 12 tribes, actually from all the 13 tribes of ancient history, they can't allow anybody to surmise that there are any other tribes of Israel in the world today. And of course, we in Identity know that the Jews aren't even any one of the tribes. They simply have a similar sounding name. Jew sounds like Judah. And so therefore, they masquerade as Judah and Israel by this sleight of hand name, Jew. And we know, of course, that now this is one of the mistakes that Stephen Collins makes. And I think he had to do this in order to get his books published in the trade. And that is, he has to equate the Parthians with Jews, or Judah with the Jews. And if he didn't do this, his books never would get any kind of publicity, and he would simply have to bite the bullet, as I do, as those of us in Identity, such as Andrew Carrington Hitchcock and myself, have to do, self-publish, and use any means of publicity possible besides the Jews, because they control the publicity. They control the entire trade of publishing, with the exception of the internet. And for some reason, they haven't been able to censor Amazon and places like that, who I guess because they like to make money. And they don't care if the Jews object. So it starts out by saying, many readers may wonder, upon seeing the title of this chapter, who or what was Parthia. It is a testimony to the woeful lack of historical knowledge in the modern world that such a question could be asked. Parthia was a vast ancient empire which ruled over Asian territory at the same time that the Roman Empire ruled over the Mediterranean region. Although Rome launched many wars of aggression against Parthia, none succeeded in their aims of subjugating the Parthians. In fact, Parthia administered many crushing defeats to the Roman armies as these two ancient superpowers opposed each other for centuries. Now, this is very interesting in the fact that since Parthia was able to engage Rome on several pitched battles and long-held warfare, it's simply amazing that mainstream historians simply ignore the Parthian Empire, because Parthia was the absolute equal and actually the superior. And the actual superior of the Roman Empire militarily. No doubt about this. So the current masquerade by the Jews as Israel is part of the ongoing struggle that we have to reveal, that the fact is that we Caucasians are the real Israelites. And that's the purpose of the series. It's also because it's an offshoot of the series I did on the pagan origins of Christmas, because we know that the wise men were in fact Parthians. They were Parthian magi. And so it behooves us to know our history. So continue. In fact, Parthia administered many crushing defeats to the Roman armies as the two ancient superpowers opposed each other for centuries. In spite of the fact that much is known about Parthia's history, it is almost totally ignored in history texts. How accurate a picture of ancient history would we have if textbooks neglected to mention the Roman Empire? It would yield a very distorted view of ancient history, wouldn't it? Yet we now have an equally distorted view of the world history as a result of Parthia's omission from texts on ancient history. Indeed, you have to do your own research to find out about Parthia. A famous 19th century historian, George Rawlinson, wrote two books extensively documenting the history of the Parthian Empire. They were entitled Parthia and the Sixth Great Oriental Monarchy. The Greco-Roman classical writers recorded a voluminous amount of information about Parthia, And Rawlinson extensively cites the classical writers in his Histories of the Parthians. He introduces the sixth great Oriental monarchy with these words, quote, this is George Rawlinson again. The picture of the world during the Roman period put before students in Histories of Rome was defective, not to say false, in its omission to recognize the real position of Parthia as a counterpoise to the power of Rome, a second figure in the picture not much inferior to the first, not inferior at all, a rival state dividing with Rome the attention of mankind and the sovereignty of the known earth. Writers of Roman history have been too much in the habit of representing Rome as a universal monarchy, a power unchecked, having no other limits than those of the civilized world. The truth seems to be that from the first to the last, there was always in the world a second power, civilized or semi-civilized, which in a true sense balanced Rome, acted as a counterpoise and a check. This power for nearly three centuries, B.C. 64 to A.D. 225, was Parthia. And I would say Parthia goes back further than 64 B.C. It's probably just as known to the world as Parthia from that point on. But it was a combination of Scythians and Israelites and Cimmerians, all three being different words for Israelites. The concept that Rome had equal rivals in the ancient world will come as a surprise to most readers. This chapter and chapter 8 will attempt to restore a balanced perspective to our view of ancient history by a thorough discussion of the origins and history of Parthia. Chapter 9 will include previously unknown information on the considerable role played by Parthian Roman geopolitics in the life and ministry of Jesus Christ. And I think we covered that pretty thoroughly in our four-part series on the pagan origins of Christmas. The lack of information on Parthia likely results from the fact that history has been taught almost exclusively from a Greco-Roman perspective. No, I would say it has been taught exclusively from a Jewish perspective. This preoccupation with Greco-Roman history has led to major misunderstandings about the reality of the ancient world. In earlier chapters, we learned that ignorance of Phoenician and Carthaginian history has led to the modern man's unawareness of the role of North America in ancient history. And, of course, we know that the Phoenicians and even the ships of Solomon had reached the New World around 1000 B.C. As a result of this false history, Greece and Rome were far less advanced than the Phoenician and Carthaginians in understanding world geography. Also, we learned in chapter 6 that Scythia, the Saxon Scythians, were civilized people, and that their power was so great that they devastated the Assyrian Empire and twice defeated the Persian Empire. Yet we read or hear almost nothing about them. Again, for the same reason, because the Anglo-Saxons are the Israelites of Scripture, the Caucasian Israelites. This chapter's title indicates that the Parthians were Israelites who descended from the 10 tribes of Israel after their relocation to Asia. Now, of course, they were relocated to Asia Minor and East, what is known today as Iraq and Iran, and even as far as India, that they were deported from the 10 northern tribes' Samaritan Empire around 745 B.C., and this entire depopulation of Samaria took place over a period of about 70 years. So there was a constant flow of the 10 northern tribes, plus many members of the two southern tribes, to Assyria from 745 B.C. to about 670 B.C. So this is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with a cover-up, a Jewish cover-up of Israelite history, precisely because the Jews don't want us Caucasians to know who we are. See Revelation 2:9, 3:9, and 12:9. Okay. excuse me. I'm sorry, folks. We have had a really long, wet, cold spell here in Chicago. This chapter's title indicates that the Parthians were Israelites who descended from the 10 tribes after their relocation to Asia. This chapter will present evidence supporting this assertion, and Chapter 8 will discuss the fascinating and ignored history of the Parthian Empire, which we should all be familiar with to show that we're smarter than everybody else. Who then were the Parthians? There is no record of their presence in Asia at all until the Persians referred to them in the 6th century BC. As I said, the reason why the historians falsely placed their date to 68 AD, or at least Rawlinson did, was because most historians had not called them that. However, Stephen Collins says that there was such a reference. There was a reference to the Parthians in the 6th century BC, so 500 and so BC. Okay, and this is the Persians. Now we have to distinguish the Persians from the Parthians. The Persians were also white, as well as the Parthians, but the Persians were an old empire, not descended from Israelites. However, they were Aramaeans, they were definitely Hebrews, and they were Shemites. So they were the kin of the Parthians, they're the kin of the Israelites, but had a separate nation and a somewhat different language, because the Persians had their own language, which was Aramaic, and it was Aramaic that eventually filtered down into Israelite speech, from turning it from Hebrew to Aramaic. And the German Parthians, issuing from the district of Parthia known as Kerman, K-E-R-M-A-N-N, which German and Kerman are cognates. You can easily tell that how related those two words are. That's where the German Anglo-Saxons come from the Kerman district of ancient Parthia. And it says, with regard to the Persian reference to these Parthians, quote, "Then there is no mention of them in the Old Testament or in the Assyrian inscriptions or in the Zend Avesta. This indicates they were not present in Asia until somewhat prior to the middle of the first millennium BC. Okay, so this means, from the Persian perspective, the Parthians arrived in their territory right around the time that the 10 northern tribes were deported to Assyria and to parts north and east of old Israel, today known as Palestine. The Persians called them the Parthva, or Partva, and named them as a subject people involved in a revolt. While they are acknowledged as not being Aryan in origin," that's not true. Who says that? This is Stephen Collins's false interpretation that the Jews are not Aryans. We know for sure that the Israelites were Aryans. Of course, the Jews aren't Aryans. But because he falsely equates the Jews with Judah and Israel, he takes the Jewish line and assists the Jews in their cover-up of the fact that they were Aryans. Now, how could, if Collins admits that the 10 northern tribes are Israel, and all Israelites look like Aryans, and certainly all the 10 northern tribe Israelites look like Aryans, how can you make such a ridiculous claim as this? This is his way of kissing Jew butt to make such a false suggestion. The fact is, all 12 tribes were Aryans, period. In fact, the coinage of ancient Parthia proves beyond a shadow of a doubt that you can see their Aryan faces. They don't have hooked nose, receding foreheads like the Jews do and did in those days. And they're certainly not black Hebrews. Their coinage and their statuary proves that they were Aryans. Okay, he says, while they are acknowledged as not being Aryan in origin, this is false. This is while they are falsely depicted as not being Aryan in origin, they are clearly identified as having a common origin with the Scythians, who were also Aryans and Israelites. Rawlinson states, there was a strong conviction on the part of those who came in contact with the Parthians that they were Scyths. and adds that the Scythic character of the Parthians is asserted in the strongest terms by the ancient writers. Rawlinson cites the classical historian Strabo, Justin, and Arian, spelled A-R-R-I-A-N, Arian, in stating, quote, "The manners of the Parthians had, they tell us, much that was Scythic in them. Their language was half Scythic, half Median, which would be Persian. They armed themselves in the Scythic fashion. They were, in fact, Scyths in descent, in habits, in character." Now, the word Scyth, if you want to pronounce it that way, comes from the Hebrew Succoth, which means tent. They got their name from the fact that they were nomadic tent dwellers. The Scythians, the Scythians were tent dwellers because they, why? Well, because they were deported from their homes by the Assyrians and they had to live in tents while they were slaves of the Assyrians. And then they had gotten used to that lifestyle. And as they moved on trying to escape the Assyrians and having several pitched battles against the Assyrians and ultimately defeating them, as they moved north and east to get away from the Assyrians, those who did move north and east became known as Scythians, while those who crossed the Caucasus Mountains became known as the Caucasians. In any case, we've got all 12 tribes represented in these migrations. But since the Judahites and the Benjaminites were the last to be deported, they probably did not accompany the 10 northern tribes across the Caucasus Mountains and they were not part of that original migration, and they came later. They are part of the Anglo-Saxon migration that came after the Caucasian Israelites crossed into southern Europe. This Scythian origin of the Parthians is further confirmed by the fact that many times in their history, ousted Parthian kings sought refuge among the Sakae tribes. Hello? In Isaac shall thy seed be called? The Saxons, folks. The Angles and the Saxons are Israelites. They sought refuge among the Sakae tribes of the Scythians or replenished their armies with soldiers from Scythian tribes. That's because they were related to each other. This recurrent Parthian reliance on the Sakae tribes of Scythia in times of trouble indicates that the Parthians and Scythians were natural allies. Of course, they were the same 12-tribed Israel bunch. And it just proves that the 12 tribes maintained their separate identity as tribes Even till today. There is a record from Diodorus, a Greek historian of the 1st century BC, that the Parthians had passed from the dominion of the Assyrians to that of the Medes, to a similar position under the Persians. So they were being bandied about like a ping pong ball. or what's that game? You play by yourself, you put your quarter in and the ball pops out. It just goes to show you how long it's been since I've played roulette. Actually, I've never played roulette. But pinball, that's the term I'm looking for. I haven't played pinball in years. Absolutely years. I've never played roulette. And anyway, ancient history neither here nor there. Rawlinson also notes that early historians regarded the Parthians to be exiles. Exiles from where? Where? Who was exiled from ancient Palestine? These statements are very significant. We know from previous chapters, by the way, the black Hebrews are never regarded as exiles from Palestine. Shouldn't make myself laugh. I have to cough, too. We know from previous chapters that two waves of Israelite captives were exiled into Asia by the Assyrians, and that some of them were located in the cities of the Medes. After the fall of Assyria's empire, it is logical that the Asian Israelites would come under the dominion of the Medes and Persians. Since the Parthians were related to the Sakae Scythians, who bore the name of Isaac, and since there is no record of any Parthians being in Asia until after the Israelites were brought there, it seems evident, of course it's absolutely certain, Mr. Collins, that the Parthians were exiled members of the 10 tribes of Israel. Supporting this view is the fact that the Parthians were regarded as exiles, an apt description for the displaced Israelites, and I'm sure they spoke Aramaic and or Hebrew while they were traveling. But Hebrew and Aramaic are very similar. In fact, Aramaic is simply a version of Hebrew. So they would have easily been able to speak with the Medes and Persians, and probably also with the Assyrians, because the Assyrians derive from Asher, who I'm pretty sure is also a Shemite. So all these kingdoms derive directly from Shem, but not all of them are Israelites. So the Israelite, they did not have Israelite law. They did not have Yahweh's Ten Commandments. They did not have the sacrificial rituals, etc., etc. Apparently, the Parthians were not happy to be other nations' subjects. Rawlinson cites an account of Diodorus that they revolted from the Medes and placed themselves under Scythian protection. While Rawlinson offers this information, he states that Diodorus based it on a source which Rawlinson does not trust. Nevertheless, it is cited because it indicates that the Parthians looked to the Scythians as their protectors and liberators. This further supports the assertion that the Parthians and the Scythians were fellow tribesmen. Now, of course, well, we'll get into it later. He'll detail the origin of the name Parthian, but of course it comes from Pharez, because we know that Zerah Judah absconded from Egypt around 1500 BC, sailed across the Mediterranean Sea, founded Troy and Rome and Britain and Spain, while Pharez remained with the Exodus tribes and came into Palestine, or Canaan land at that time, as the only representative of Judah. So there are very, very few Zerah Judahites that accompanied Zerah Judah in the Exodus. But that's where the Parthians get their name from. It's a variation of Pharez. Okay, he says, and now from the Encyclopedia Britannica, the alphabets in use in Persia, at least from the time of the Arsacid dynasty onwards, are based upon the Aramaic. The earliest records of Aramaic go back about 800 BC. As I just explained to you, Aramaic and Hebrew are, one is, Aramaic is a version of Hebrew. It's a dialect of Hebrew. The earliest records of Aramaic go back about 800 BC and were found in northern Syria. Other developments of Aramaic are modern square Hebrew. That's very interesting, which would suggest that the Jews did not create the square Hebrew, that the Parthians did, and the Jews must have just borrowed it from the Parthians. Very interesting. But I think whether that's true or not can be pretty much accurately determined by archaeology to see whether the block Hebrew or square Hebrew was present in Parthia at this time. Again, this would prove again that these people are in fact Hebrews and Israelites, not to be confused with Jews. It continues, the Arsacid dynasty was, as we shall see, the dynasty of the Parthians. That the Parthians utilized an Aramaic alphabet and imposed it within their empire powerfully indicates that the Parthians originated in the region of Syria and Palestine, where the Aramaic language originated. Well, it didn't originate in Palestine. It actually originated in what's called Syria, and by the Arameans, who were also Shemites and kinsmen of the Hebrews, but not Israelites. The fact that the Parthians use a Semitic alphabet clearly indicates that their native language and racial origin were Semitic, that is, Aryan. Because Aryan and Shemitic and Israelite and Hebrew are the same. Mr. Collins is using the false Jewish distinction between Semitic or Hebrew versus Aryan languages, and it's not true. Hebrew is an Aryan language. Also, since early historians strongly maintained that the Parthians were a Scythic people, The Semitic nature, that is Hebrew Aryan nature, of Parthia's language further argues for a Semitic origin, that is Israelite Hebrew Aryan origin, for the Scythians. That the Parthian language was related to the Hebrew language also indicates that the Parthians were among the descendants of the 10 tribes of Israel, and are also Aryans, a large mass of Shemites who were transplanted into Media and other Asian regions. Okay, so this discrepancy, this false dichotomy between Hebrew and Aryans is one of the tricks the Jews use to fool people to claiming that the Israelites of the Old Testament were not an Aryan people, but a hook-nosed, receding forehead, beady-eyed, crooked face, crooked teeth, crooked chin, crooked body, a bunch of Edomite Jews. Okay, nothing could be further from the truth. This is why they're hiding the Parthian Empire, because we know that they derive from the 12 tribes of Israel, and all of their statuary and coinage shows that they are, in fact, an Aryan people, proving that the Israelites were an Aryan people. He continues, what little is preserved of the Parthian language also indicates a Semitic origin for the Parthians, that is, Aryan Semitic. Rawlinson states the Parthian word for city was karta, or Karta, same spelling, K-A-R-T-A. In chapter 5, the Semitic Israelite origin of Carthage was examined, and it was noted that the original Semitic name of Carthage was Kiriath Hadashath. The original Semitic name of Carthage is also rendered as Kart Hadasht, and I'm sure we get our English word for chart from Karta, as in Magna Carta, meaning new city. The Shemitic origin of Carthage is well established. It was a Phoenician colony, and therefore also Aryan. Everybody knows that the Phoenicians are Aryans, and Carthage is one of their colonies, proving yet again that the Shemites are Aryans. And they use the word Kirjath, or Kart, a shortened version of Kirjath, for a city. The Parthians used the same word karta for city, indicating that the Carthaginians and the Parthians had a common Shemitic, Aryan, Israelite origin. We shall also later examine the role of the Parthian Magi, an influential portion of Parthia's ruling classes. An early Carthaginian ruler was named Mago, again indicating a common linguistic heritage with the Parthians. A prominent family of Parthians was called from the Surin family, and one of their hereditary rights was to crown each newly elected king. The word Surin, it also appears as Surina or Surinus, is a Hebrew composite word. The Hebrew word Sur indicates the meaning reign or make princes, as in czar. The Hebrew word En or Ayin includes the meaning face, eye, sight, or presence. The Parthian name Surin is Hebrew for a person whose presence makes princes or reign in his eyesight. The Parthian Surin did exactly what the Hebrew word signifies, showing a parallel between the Hebrew and the Parthian languages. Okay, yet their statuary and coinage clearly show them to be an Aryan people. And Collins simply ignores that. I don't think there's any coinage or statuary in this article, in this book by Stephen Collins, because that would prove beyond any shadow of a doubt and that the Hebrews were Aryans. The offshoot languages of the Aramaic-Hebrew combination, it definitely includes German. As I said, the Germans come from the Parthian sector called Karaman, and they picked up a lot of Aramaic-sounding words. And in fact, if you listen to, I'm trying to remember the name of the Persian dialect that is very common even in Persia today, which sounds just like German. it's hard to distinguish the two. In fact, I'm trying to get a hold of William Smith, with whom I did a show on this topic many years ago, and have him come on Eurofolk Radio. In any case, we're showing the connection between the Aryans, the Shemites, the Hebrews, and the Israelites, which the scholarly world under Jewish domination fails to point out. We shall also see that many of the personal and place names of the Parthians were not just Shemitic, but were specifically Israelite in nature. After the Persian Empire's fall, Parthian territory fell into the hands of the Greeks under Alexander the Great. In the division of Alexander's kingdom at his death, Parthia was ruled by the Seleucid Greek Empire. In approximately 256 BC, the provinces of Parthia and Bactria revolted against Seleucid Greek rule and declared their independence. Again, this is Israelites. This is Israelites rebelling against dictatorship, which we always do. The only difference between today and yesteryear is the fact that today's Israelites don't know they're Israelites and consequently don't know what to do. They're totally confused. Well, that's why we're here, to explain who we are, who the Caucasian people are, who the Israelites are, who the Jews are, and get people thinking straight. The number one rule of warfare, the first tactic of war is deception. Yes, Collins does have much correct, but his basic false assumption that the Jews are Israelites and that Hebrew is a non-Aryan language, I mean, that's just basic Jewish spin on ancient history. He has to follow this line to get his books published in the mainstream media. So that's why these things have to be clarified. Okay, there is some difference of opinion whether they revolted in the same year or in proximate years, but there is a consensus that the development and independence of Parthia and Bactria were intertwined. Some historians record that Arsaces, the first king of the Parthians, was a Bactrian, but most accounts agree that he was the chieftain of a Scythian tribe, the Danites, sounds like Danites to me, who slew the Greek satrap and liberated his Parthian kinsmen. It should also be noted that Arsaces, the Scythian founder of Parthia's dynasty, included the name of Isaac in the Sakae Scythians in his personal name Arsacus. Oh, great. Okay, sorry, my page disappeared right off my screen. Just got it back. Hosea 1:6 through 10 recorded a promise from God that he would make the Israelites too numerous to count after he sent them into captivity. The Judahite historian Josephus confirmed that this had happened by the first century AD. Given their huge population, it is logical that the Israelites would also have become known by the names of their sub-tribes in addition to the names of their principal tribes. Many are aware that some parts of the Bible record genealogies of the tribes of Israel, and many people regard them as the most boring parts of the Bible. However, for historical research, these sections can be invaluable indeed. Among other things, they indicate the names of the individual clans of the tribes of Israel, and some of these names can be located in geographic and proper names in the post-exilic period. For example, Numbers 26:35-36 records that the sub-tribes or clans of the Israelite Ku Klux Klan of the Israelite tribe of Ephraim were named the Bakrites. Okay. Bactria. Bakrites. Bactria. The Aranites and the Tahanites. The old Seleucid province of Bactria, which grew up in conjunction with Parthia, bears the name of one of the sub-tribes of Ephraim in a Hellenized form. An Israelite origin for Bactria is supported by the indication that the Bactrian language was related to the Saka, or at least underwent strong influences from Saka tongues. The record that the Bactrians welcomed a Scythian ruler who freed them from a Greek satrap, and the further indication that the Bactrians shared a linguistic heritage with the Parthians argues that the Bactrians were also Sakae, or Saka, who had descended from the 10 tribes of Israel and obviously descended from Isaac. And because Isaac had two sons, namely Jacob and Esau was kicked out, that leaves only the 12 tribes as representatives in the world today of those who would be called by the name of Isaac, Genesis 21:12. Henry Rawlinson, in his book Bactria, states, there seems to be very little doubt that the population of Bactria was largely Scythian, and cites Justin, a classical author, who wrote, the Bactrian Empire was founded by the Scythians. Okay, now we know, folks, now we begin to understand why the Jews want all this history covered up. Numbers 26:36 also notes that another clan of the tribe of Ephraim descended from Aran, E-R-A-N, and was known as the Aranites, a group of people known as the Iranians. E-R-A-N, Iranians, were present in the region of ancient Persia and Parthia. Well, how about that? Iran is named after an Israelite. Of course, we knew this all along. It's just that the Jews are covering it up and the world is ignorant because of Jewish spin on biblical history. It is significant that Assyria transplanted the defenders of Samaria, an Ephraimite city, into the cities of the Medes. Therefore, we would expect thereafter to notice some Ephraimite names in the Medo-Persian region. The Iranians, they should spell it with an I instead of an E, bore the exact Hebrew name of one of the clans of Ephraim in the area of Persia-Parthia. This name survives today in the modern name of the territory of ancient Persia, Iran. Indeed, the Encyclopedia Britannica, in referencing Aran, E-R-A-N, in its index section, simply states, Aran, see Iran. The modern capital of Iran is named Tehran, also preserving the name of the Ephraimite clan. This book in no way maintains or implies that the modern Iranians are Israelites, as it is very clear from subsequent history that the modern Iranians were principally Medio-Persian in racial origin. Well, they're all mixed up. They're definitely not Israelites anymore, although the Iranians show many traces of white Aryan features. They're definitely more white than the Jews are. They're definitely more Israelite than the Jews are. So are the Palestinians. The modern capital of city of Iran is named Tehran, right, named after Aran the Israelite. However, the name Iran apparently does not come from the name of one of the clans. Really? Apparently, he says. Which was placed in Medio-Persian territory by the Assyrians and lived there for... Where would it come from? It's not from Iran. There is evidence of considerable Semitic influence in ancient Persia. In commenting on the ancient Pahlavi, or Pahlavi, Persian language, Zenaid Ragozin states, I think that's the dialect I was looking for, the Pahlavi dialect, which is just like German. It's just like German. He continues, Pahlavi does not seem to be Persian at all, but rather Shemitic. Well, we're telling you that the Israelites were Aryans, and that German is, they know that Germanic is an Aryan language. Germanic is a dialect of Hebrew. It's a dialect of Aramaic, and therefore is Hebrew. Let's start over, because here, this is where the confusion comes in. From somebody who falsely claims that the Jews are Israelites, and that the Jews, Judahites and Israelites had hooked noses, receding foreheads, beady eyes, and forked tongues. They just don't get it because they falsely equate the Jews with Judah and Israel. That is, an enormous proportion of the words, nouns, pronouns, verbs, adverbs, prepositions, conjunctions are Shemitic, while the grammar and construction are Iranian, and questions how this could have happened, if not by constant contact with old Semitic nations, that is, with the Israelites themselves, with other Aryan Hebrews. The obvious reason why, and in fact, AngloSaxonIsrael.com has an article about the transition from Hebrew to Germanic, and I'll be quoting that as part of this series on the Parthians. Pahlavi does not seem to be Persian at all, he says, but rather what it is Hebrew, Aramaic, and Germanic all combined, you know, because all languages evolve to some extent, and that's what's going on here. You have a combination of Sanskrit, which is also a derivative of Hebrew, influencing a lot of this language. So all of these people, the Shemites, the Indo-Aryans, the Iranians, the Scythians, the Parthians, etc., and the Cimmerioi, Sumerians, are all Israelites. The Israelites populated this entire area because that's where they were deported to by the Assyrians. The obvious reason why Pahlavi in old Persian language had such a strong Shemitic character is that a large proportion of the 10 tribes of Israel was forcibly resettled in Medo-Persian areas by the Assyrians. Additionally, large numbers of Judahites, not Jews, Judahites, were settled in Mesopotamia when Judah fell to the Babylonians. The descendants of all those captives of Israelites were later absorbed into the Persian Empire, or held in bondage under the Persians. Indeed, many Judahites, Daniel, Esther, Mordecai, Nehemiah, Ezra, etc., had very high government positions in the Persian Empire. Since the Judahites were Shemites, they also influenced the language of Persia in a Shemitic direction. Later, when the Parthians, descendants of the 10 tribes of Israel, ruled a whole region for centuries, their Shemitic language would have greatly impacted the language of Persia. Absolutely. The Encyclopedia Britannica also notes the Shemitic nature of the Persian Pahlavi language. The name Pahlavi or Pahlavi, which means Parthian, can be traced back for many centuries. The great peculiarity of the language is that though it is Iranian, it is full of Shemitic Aramaic words. So we've been telling you that Shemitic Hebrew and Aramaic and Indo-Aryan and German and English are all derived from Hebrew. Unlike the garbage, the claptrap that comes from, well, actually, Mr. Collins is promoting the same claptrap. And it's not, yes, Truth Lover 120, German is a Hebrew offshoot. It sure is. Okay. And Pahlavi contains the name of the Israelite tribe of Levi or Levi. As mentioned above, the Scythian clan of the Dahanites had a major role in the origins of Parthia's independence. It is possible that they were from a third major branch of the Ephraimites mentioned in Numbers 26:35, the Tahanites, T-A-H-A-N-I-T-S, Tahanites. If the Dahanites were the Tahanites of Ephraim, D and T are linguistic similar consonants, it would mean that Parthian independence began as a result of three separate clans of the tribe of Ephraim acting in concert. Again, the Israelites always maintained their tribal independence from the other tribes, but yet would frequently combine to unify against an external enemy. And we pray to Yahweh that this tendency of the Israelites would come again into the fore. Okay, the Bactrians, Iranians, and the Hanites were most likely the Ephraimite clans of the Bacrites, the Aranites, and the Tahanites, and their mutual cooperation would have been the backbone of Parthia's strength. Amen to that. The subsequent stability of Parthia argues that its component clans were closely related and had much in common. This stability is understandable if the above clans were all part of the tribe of Ephraim. While the name Dahanites also seems similar to the tribe of Dan, It is doubtful that they were Danites. The tribe of Dan traditionally did not act in concert with or consult the other tribes about its actions. Joshua 19:47 records the Danites undertook a war without advice or cooperation from the other tribes. And Ezekiel 27:17-19 shows the Danites had developed an identity completely apart from the other tribes. Since the Danites were historically loners among the tribes of Israel, it is likely that the Scythian Tahanites were the Tahanites of Ephraim. I would tend to agree with that. Since Ephraimite means names predominate in Parthia's origin, and since the Massagetae were one of the foremost tribes of their Scythian kinsmen, it indicates that Ephraim and Manasseh, the major tribes of the ten-tribe kingdom of Israel, and inheritors of the birthright promise of Genesis 48 that included a national greatness, were the dominant tribes of the Parthians and Scythians, respectively. No wonder that history records a very close relationship between the Scythians and the Parthians. By the way, the Scythians and Parthians had tremendous horsemen, which, of course, the Arians have always been known as tremendous horsemen, and they were great mounted cavalry. And I think I'll do a show on this, the wars between the Parthians and the Romans, and also the Greeks, because the Greeks had a hell of a time trying to beat the Parthians and the Scythians. Why? Because they invented the circle of mounted warriors shooting arrows at the enemy. So they would, if they came across a Greek infantry group, they would simply ride their horses around the Greek infantry and start shooting their arrows into the infantry and just picking them off. And the Scythians and Parthians would defeat the Greeks this way over and over again. And Alexander was greatly flummoxed by this maneuver. He finally realized that the only way to defeat this maneuver was to press forward and push the horsemen up against a river or up against a wood or a hill to stop the riders from circling his infantry. So Alexander never defeated the Parthians and Scythians, and neither did Rome. And also, it's from the Parthians that we get our Teutonic Knights, because they were already wearing chainmail and riding horses as knights in those days. So it is another reason why they don't want you to know the Teutonic origin of the German knights. And of course, you know, that spread further west to Britain and elsewhere is with these Parthians. However, even though the Parthians were kinsmen to and frequently allied to the Scythians, they were not always peaceable with one another, as we shall see in the next chapter. And of course, that's the history of the Israelite tribes too. Adolf Hitler in the chat room says, the word Parthia, I don't know if you forgot to type the R in there, or the word Parthia is a Slavonic word and means group or tribe, right? So here we have, excuse me, sorry folks, got a bad cold tonight. Okay. As further evidence, I see we only have about 5 minutes left, as further evidence of the Israelite origins of the Parthians, some Parthian cities were given Hebrew names. Of course, from the identity perspective, this is all natural, because the Judahites and Israelites and the Hebrews and the Shemites are all Aryans to begin with, Adamites, and the Jews are not. All of this confusion that Collins is trying to address is caused by the Jews themselves with the false claim that they are Israel and that the Israelites were a quote-unquote hook-nosed Shemitic people when in fact they were Aryan Israelites all along. As further evidence of the Israelite origins of the Parthians, some Parthian cities were given Hebrew names. An early capital of the Parthians was named Dara, which is the exact name of one of the early forebears of the tribe of Judah. There you go. 1 Chronicles 2, 3-6. God had promised that the tribe of Judah would produce kings and rulers, the scepter promise of Genesis 49. And of course, we find that there's a cognate, Sur and Zar, Caesar, Sur, Zar. And King David was promised that he would always have descendants ruling over the house of Judah, Jeremiah 33:17. Jeremiah's prophecy was made after the relocation of the house of Israel, the northern 10 tribes, into Asia. Therefore, because of the timing of Jeremiah's prophecy, we should expect to find descendants of King David ruling over the 10 tribes of Israel after they had moved to Asia. And of course, he means Asia Minor, which is known as Turkey today. And of course, they spread further east in Asia Minor as well into what would be known as India and possibly even Tibet. However, the Jewish forebear, also what is today known as Pakistan. However, the Jewish forebear named Dara was, now the Judahite forebear named Dara was of the sub-tribe of Zerah, not the Pharez branch of the Judahites, which produced both King David and Yahshua Messiah. Now, that's interesting because there's really not much evidence of Zerah Judah traveling with the Pharez branch, and very few of them. I think there were maybe only two Zerah Judahites that accompanied the rest of the tribes in the Exodus. But let's see what he has to say. This reference to the Zerah branch of Judah is rare in Parthian annals, but there are many Parthian kings with names containing the root word Pharez, indicating David's royal bloodline. From the eastern edge of Parthian rule and influence to the western edge, Parthian kings regularly included the Pharez name. A Parthian king who ruled in the area of West India was named Gondopharez, and several kings ruling over the Caucasus Mountains kingdom of Iberia were named Pharezmanus. Chapter 4 noted that the term Iberia is a name derived from the root word Eber, the father of the Hebrews. Strabo records that the Iberians were the kinsmen of the Scythians, whose Israelite origin has already been demonstrated. The above examples alone show that David's descendants of the house of Pharez were ruling over separate groups of the 10 tribes of Israel, from the Caucasus Mountains to the territory of modern India. Also, many kings of Parthia itself had names indicating that they were also royal members of the Davidic line of Judah. Such names include the key consonants of PH, R, S in Hellenized forms of their Parthian names, such as Parthian royal names as Phraates, Phraortes, Phraactes are examples. Over the centuries, God kept his promise to David by causing David's descendants to rule over many Israelite nations in Asia Minor. All right, folks, I've had to shorten the show to 1 hour, and we're already past the time. So thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. And we'll continue this study next time. Don't know how long this series is going to last, but we're going to discuss this thoroughly because we're tracing the origin of the Germanic Israelites and the Anglo-Saxon Israelites, otherwise known as the Caucasian people, in Pharez, Judah. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh, pass the ammunition. See you next time.